What's
Yeah,
up?
be our guest.
What's going on?
Nothing. Just
coffee.
Yeah.
Checking kits.
Yeah.
Every couple.
Yeah. Exactly. Same. I did it right before I jumped on here. I'm literally 13 hours from my next stretch goal, and it's killing me.
Oh, wow. You're closer than us.
Yeah, we're about like 113 or 213. Where are
you'll make it. You'll make it up, though.
Yeah, I want to get at least a second stretch goal, but the third one, like, I already printed out. There are the pins of the...
Okay. Right on.
So that, I would like to actually, like, unlock that.
Yeah, we have pins, pin scheduled too, but... like the next one I'm next, the 13-hour one is like literally it's trading cards, and I'm making me either way. I don't really be honest.
Yeah, that's why that was our $6,000 stretch goal, because Mittens did like so well last year, and Mittens is completely different than a superhero.
right. But, my daughter loved that book, by the way.
Oh,
that's who I got it for her. That's just when I backed it. It was literally for her. Stickers on her water bottle she takes to school. So listen, if you're impressed, if you're impressed a 12-year-old girl, you're doing something right.
That's how you make future fans, though. That's like it's kind of cool. Like, you make something that captures the kids. It's like that's how you make new franchises.
That's how you do it.
So, Jason, you were the first time guest on our podcast.
I am. It's been a long time coming, I think.
Yeah. I actually wanted to have you on, like, I don't even know, a year or two ago.
Yeah, we ran in some odd circles there for a while. Like, and I have a wacky, my work schedule is nuts anyway. So it's like, so we've been constantly like two ships passing in the night, I think.
So how did you get like started creating comics, and like what inspired you?
Well, I've been drawing, since I was a kid, you know, like, I was very infatuated with like the, anything like just drawing, like if it was Jaws, I was drawing like sharks, you know what I mean? It was like, I was born in the '70s. So, you know, I get a lot of, I have the Bionic Man, a lot of really awesome influences. Yeah. Right. You're like, oh, exactly. All really awesome influences of the '70s. So, Battlestar Galactica, of course, Star Wars that came out, and then Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers, like all these fantastic things. And I was always creating. But superheroes weren't really on my radar. I mean, I watched the 60s Batman show, you know, and all that, right? And then, but you know, comics, you know, I watched the 1960s Spider-Man animated show, which I loved. I loved that show. And so I finally... I wasn't really, superheroes were on my radar. I did growing up, I eventually got into Marvel comics. My mom had bought me like a Marvel coloring book, right? It was like, I've never forget it. It's like the cover has Spider-Man, it's Romita drew it, it's Spider-Man verse Green Goblin. It was awesome. It was so cool. Wow. And so that started, like I started tracing that stuff. And, you know, that's like early like anatomy stuff. And just like tracing and putting like, you know, changing the way things look. So that's how I started. And, you know, with comic books, it's kind of started with, you know, like Super Friends, like a lot of us. It was in the Super Friends cartoon and then, like, you know, all that early stuff. So, so I kind of just started doodling, and, you know, you can't draw very well as a, you know, like, was I like eight? And it wasn't until about 84 when I really, like, kind of settled on what is now the Convictor. I realized I could create my own characters as opposed to just drawing other characters. It took a while for that to click in my head. And once it did, you know, I was like reading Punisher, you know, I was reading all these really cool things early on. And so I was like, all right, so Vigilante seemed cool. So I kind of started that. And then like the next year, it'll be 40 years I created this guy. And so I drew him up again. He was very much a Vigilante, right? And then, so I just kind of worked on from there, and it kind of organically grew into what it is now. So that's how I started. I was always drawing all kinds of weird shit as a kid anyway. So
well, one thing that you said that made me remember something I haven't thought of in a while. because the Buck Rogers thing, I was just thinking of you know, the Looney Tunes is Duck Rogers,
yeah,
21st yeah. century. Yep.
Oh yeah, right on. Absolutely.
Oh my god, yeah. The
70s and 80s, there's nothing like it when it comes to cartoons.
I feel like a lot of the stuff, like even in the 90s, like there was some good stuff, and it's just like, but like, I could tell it was on the downturn, right? Like I used to watch like the Flintstones and stuff, and like
I tell everyone cartoons ended with Spider-Man Unlimited. And then like when that cartoon came out, that was the downfall of that and Batman anime series. After that, it's all hot mess.
No, that's very cool. And that's cool. That's cool how long you've been working on that. But it's interesting because something I think about when it comes to artistry, I don't remember where I heard this quote, but it was something like, if you steal from one artist, you're a plagiarist. But if you steal from 100, you're a genius. Yep. And the whole idea is like, when you're really trying to get better at art, like you do have to copy other people because you don't know who you are yet.
Right. They always say art is theft, right? That's something they've always said. And it's true. Whether you're using a reference for something, you know, I mean, there's a difference between using a reference and swiping. That's a completely different element, right? And now with digital technology, it's insanely easier to do these things. But yeah, I think like even they just say if you take inspiration for something, that's technically art theft. I mean, if you really want to be technical about it. And artists have been borrowing from other artists since the dawn of time, since somebody started painting on a cave wall, you know. And I think that, somebody saw an elk on a cave wall and says,
I was about to say, I picture somebody with a club. That's mine. Intellectual property rights.
Yeah. Exactly. That's my idea.
Yeah, that's my idea. Oh my God. That I kind of want like a comic short that draws that, because like it is true. Like there are a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
I have some friends who every time they come up with like a creative idea and then somebody else comes up with something similar, they're basically like, oh, they stole my idea. And it's like,
yeah,
no, like one of the things I noticed is that like in general, there's like waves of movements of people recognizing new ideas. Like one thing I told Greg several months ago, both him and my brother simultaneously started rewatching The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah.
And right. I told them, I go, do you know why that's happening? And they're like, I don't know, like something popped up and I was thinking about it. And I told him, I go, interestingly enough, I have a client who brought this to my attention, but it was the 50th anniversary of The Godfather. And so people have been putting marketing out there that's been so subliminal, no one's been noticing. And then suddenly The Sopranos come out and everyone wants to watch it again. Right. It's that's what I mean. So like that's true with artist inspiration, though, too. Like there's people that come up with the same idea at the same time. It's because they like there's so much stuff in the world. But the stuff that stands out, everybody sees that stuff. And so they're all going to get slightly inspired by some of the same stuff.
I've been more than transparent about the things that I used to create my character, the Victor. Like, initially he was very much a Punisher character. And then, but I was very into Daredevil at the time. The Hand Ninja were, that whole run. Like, that was a great run. And then also, I was into I didn't realize even independent comics existed until I was at the comic book shop one day and I grabbed the first run of Eastman and Laird's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. It was Black and White from Mirage. I was like, because on my radar, it was only DC and Marvel, right? And I picked this up and it was pretty life-changing to see that there was other characters that exist outside besides these two main superpower comics. And so that they were influential because Snake Eyes from G.I. Joe was influential. So I have a lot of my character that you see now has probably four or five hardcore inspirations to where he is now. And because I don't know, like it's hard to like, yes, you can come up with original ideas, but in comics is, it's been done to death. Like there's always something, right? There's always something similar because it's comics. Everyone's imaginative. Everyone's got a brain. And now into comics, there's a bajillion into comics, which is awesome for our community. It is, you're right. You're like, you see a reference, you take inspiration for something. That's comics, right?
Yeah, there is.
As long as you don't blatantly steal that shit, that's all that matters.
It's like Simpsons did it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
There was
you saw the episode where Drunk Peter literally said they stole everything from the Simpsons. Right, so there you go.
There was a character there is a character. Like, so we still have him as a character, but he's gonna look like different than what he used to look like. And he's like completely like when Dylan saw the character, he's like, so Deadpool. And I was like, he's not Deadpool.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure you told the artist to draw Deadpool and put on a mask or put on a helmet or something. I was like, pretty sure this is Deadpool.
It was like Deadpool and like Sauron, like
or Shredder. I was picturing Shredder or what's the guy from the Power Rangers, with the metal armor. I forgot his name.
Yeah, wait. You gotta be more strict. There's a lot of dudes in Power Rangers and metal armor.
Oh my god! No! I mean the bad guy though. It's the main one.
Lord Zedd.
Zedd.
He's right up here on my shelf. Yeah, I can't see him. He's behind me.
And Deadpool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's all right.
And I was like, yeah. And then somebody did like fan art of it, which is really weird. Like that's lost through the Twitterverse somewhere.
But. Yeah, fan art is awesome though. Like I remember I got my first piece. It was like I didn't think anybody gave a crap about something I was drawing, but me. And someone just like, hey, I saw it. I'm like, and it's cool. I get a lot of it now, and I love artist interpretation of my stuff. Like that is like so cool to see how other people view you. You know, your character. And as for like comparing characters that look like Deadpool, I used to get a lot the Convictor because he's got green eyes. People say Spawn. He looks like Spawn, you know, or he looks like Deathstroke. I've heard that a lot. And originally, you know, as a creator, you're like, you know, of all the characters, these characters really weren't the ones that, but you got to understand, it's people just are just comparing it to something that they recognize. That's all it is. Because, I mean, I do comic book shows and stuff and conventions, and people come up and say it looks like this. And, you know, originally, it could chap your ass originally if you're new to the scene. But then you realize that all they're doing is just equating it to something they know.
It's definitely
a compliment.
That's a huge thing.
Yeah, for sure. So once you get that in your head, it's fine.
I think the biggest thing, because my brother's like that when it comes to music, when like somebody says it sounds like something, right? Yeah. And like they might take it offensively. I'm like, no, like you have to realize, and this is true for all of marketing, for any product, it doesn't matter if it's entertainment or if it's a, you know, a shovel, you know, like a product that solves a problem. You have to connect something, your new idea, with a familiar idea, or they can't associate with it. I've told this story before on several podcasts, but there's the iPhone, like the smart touchscreen phone, was created a decade before anyone bought one. No one wanted it because they couldn't relate it to anything. There was nothing like it. It was so innovative that no one could jump on it. And so that's the same with like creative ideas. Like if I look at your idea and it doesn't remind me of anything, right? How am I supposed to remember it?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. Like it's definitely a good thing for sure.
Oh, nice mug.
product placement. Here, let me cover it. There we go.
No, that's cool. That's awesome. See, that's what you got to do as a creator, though. You got to be everywhere. You don't need to be in people's faces, but like you got the shirt, you got the mug.
Yeah, you got to support your own brand, right? Yeah, that's what you
got
to
do.
That's
awesome. We went to a Comic-Con like a couple years ago, but we weren't tabling it. We're walking around eating cupcakes or whatever. And
those cupcakes were good.
Sounds like a good time. My kind of Comic-Con.
And we did have a book bag that had our logo on it. This like shitty one from like Vistaprint. And
I forgot about that. I think I still have that somewhere.
We had stickers of our logo and just like coasters and stuff. And we just were throwing them on the tables.
You know what? You do what you gotta do.
It's funny. It makes me think of like old hip hop artists when they were younger, like just handing out cassettes to people. It's just like you gotta get it into people's hands.
You go to Times Square right now and you still you want my mixtape?
Come on. Take it, it's the best one ever.
Yeah, I mean you guys are in New York, I'm from Jersey, so we know how it is. we absolutely know how it is.
Yeah, the last time I went to New York City was like my friend's, like he was getting engaged and we were like leaving. Like we were like on the way of like leaving. And this guy had like a CD. He's like, buy my CD, like buy my album. Like it's nothing you ever heard. And like,
it's like, I'm sure it isn't because I don't have a CD player.
If I did buy it, it's going to probably just be stuck left in my car or on the PATH train. Where it's going to stay.
Coaster. Played it and it was bad. It was bad.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it's nothing you ever heard before. I mean, he did say that. I was more of a warning than I think it was more of like a perceived expectation for you.
Yeah. He now uses it as animal control. He just puts that on. All the deer now in the yard disappear.
Yeah, right on.
So how do you go about marketing your comics and building your fan base?
Originally, what I did when I didn't really come back to comics. I drew the convictor character through high school and stuff like that, and made like black and white comics and ash cans, and created a good portion of my characters back then. And graduated high school in '92, and right out of high school, you know, you get a job, right? Then I start a family, and then next thing you know, boom, 20 years are gone, and I haven't really done anything with the characters. I was drawing here and there because I was making graphics for, you know, I had a martial arts business. So I was making graphics for the business and t-shirts, and I was still doing graphic stuff, but I wasn't really drawing comics. But I drew here and there. I was like 46 at the time. I was just writing a bucket list or something. And my son, who is a grown man, just came home from the army, being deployed. And he had said, you know, I'm writing this list of, you know, bucket list stuff, right? So one of the things was to make, you know, a real comic. It was my son's suggestion to make a real comic, because he always said, I always wanted to set as a kid, I wanted to make a real comic with this character. So I started on Instagram, and you know, and I just put my drawings up there, you know, and I was very open with the character. If somebody had a question, I would talk about it. I started doing lives right early on in 2020, and just talking freely about my character, you know, because I've had, you know, almost at that time it was 30 something years in my head, so I could talk about him. I know everything about him. I mean, like we most do our characters, right? So it kind of started. So I was out there, and I was just out there talking about it and stuff like that. So what marketing wise, originally we decided that we were going to, my second book was supposed to be my first book. My Resurgence book was supposed to be the first book. But we kind of got steam with the fan base, because the fan base grew rapidly, which I didn't really anticipate. And the fact that people actually cared about what I was doing, which was another thing I didn't anticipate. I was kind of just doing it for me, right? And the character, a lot of people gravitated towards the character and really connected with it. And so we end up going, there was this weird thing we did on Instagram where we had this story voting, where it was like, if my character could face off with any classic movie monster, who would it be, right? And it was like the Wolfman, like, just was like right there. It just took the voting. Dracula was a close second. So I said, you know, I'm not one to steer away from people that like my stuff or kind of where they're leaning. So I was like, you know what? I said, maybe I could do something with this. And so it kind of was really going to be a mini comic, but it got steam and got steam. And we said, shit, we're going to have to make a comic out of this. And so that became the first comic. I just had, as the creator, I have a story arc for my character, the Convictor, that's last, you know, has a definite start and an end. And I had to make sure that I could work this into it. So I had to step back and see if I could integrate it into the overall Convictor story. And believe it or not, it fitted fairly well, and didn't really require a lot. So I said this was going to be the first book, and I took the opportunity in that first book to, you know, show a different side of my character, and primarily the side where you can get the shit beat out of him. So marketing wise, that got its steam, and we kind of leaned into what folks wanted. And when we went to Kickstarter, it was also, I had a lot of backing from people, because this is a passion project of mine, because I came back to comics, so the story people gravitate towards as well, that I was able to redo this after 35 years or so, 36 years, and make a true comic. So the people got behind the idea that I'm fulfilling a dream of like 12-year-old me, right? So it kind of marketed itself. The first book did really well. I mean, I was always out there talking about my stuff. That's the thing. I hear a lot from my peers in the business and indies that they tell me, they say, well, the reason is because you're out there, you're approachable. You talk about it, you're open. Cause I've had people say, hey, I've seen people do lives and somebody asks about their character and they say, well, I can't say that right now. I can't talk about that until the first book comes out. I'm like, hey man, you want me to care about your product? You got to care about your product. And so I think from my, I was told I was approachable that way. So it was like an organic marketing approach for sure. So that's kind of what happened the first time. Now it's more, you know, it's a little bit different. So now we got to gather all time. The character has the branding's out there. People recognize the character. So it's a little easier on one aspect, but it's also more difficult, as you guys know, with Kickstarters and algorithms and all that fun crap that comes with doing this. So there's always an uphill climb, always. So
That's awesome. I was going to say, you know, one thing when it comes to marketing is a lot of people try to use like social media or email marketing, whatever form they're using, and they kind of just try to like figure out like the tricks behind it. But in all reality, like, I hope that you see this, is that what you did basically was word of mouth marketing. You just told people about your story and people cared about it. And then all social media did was allow you to tell 1,000 people at once. Exactly. Right. And that's so like, I feel like that's a really important thing. Like people should hear is like, don't just use social media to blast. Like, here's my comic. Yeah, like, this is something me and my brother, we do artist consultation to like musical performers. So like hip hop artists or like R&B artists, stuff like that. Okay. And one of the things I tell every single one of them is that there are 7 billion people on this planet, right? Probably almost 8 now, I think. Right. There's got to be at least 7,000 people that look and sound exactly like you. Exactly like you. Right? True. People have seen doppelgangers, right? Like, we're like, oh, look at this person. It looks just like me.
Well, what do they say? There's only like five original human faces. Isn't that what they say? That a variation of that, right?
That'd be weird. I haven't heard that one. But
maybe it's 4 or 5. I don't know.
I'm going to bet that, like, you know, because like everybody looks kind of like somebody, right? And so like thing is that, but there are definitely people out there that look almost exactly like you. So what I tell them is like, knowing that, there's only 2 things you can do to beat those other 7,000 people. The first one is outlast them. Consistency. Do it forever. Don't stop. Right. And the second one is to share your authentic story. And that's the thing that no one else can replicate. It doesn't matter if they look like you. It doesn't matter if they sound like you. There is no way they live the exact life that you did. There's too many variables in life for that to ever happen. Like, there's people that are like, you know, like, oh, wow, we had almost the same upbringing, but it wasn't. It was very close, but it wasn't the same. Something was different. Right. And that's your story. So like the fact that you like super passionate as a kid, kind of, you know, let it fall to the wayside and then bring the dream back to reality. Like, that's such a powerful story.
I was asked not too long ago about one piece of advice I could give people that are trying to promote, not just Kickstarters, but promote their original character or their indie comic. And the piece of advice I can give, because it worked for me, was be passionate about your product. Passion is palpable. It just, if you're not passionate about it, that's going to translate. To get the backer or just someone to be on board with what you're doing, you have to connect it and have them care about what you're doing. And so if you're not passionate about your project, they're not going to be passionate about your project. So that's a really big piece of the puzzle right there, I think. And I mean, now marketing wise, now I'm part of the Savage Sandbox. And we all market each other. When one of us our campaigns are spread out throughout the year. So when one of us is up, everybody else is on blast. Everybody is out there promoting and hustling and you know, so that does help a lot with our reach. Our reach definitely is a lot further because there's 7 of us. So, so we're able to do that. But I'm telling you, if you don't care about your product, your backer is not going to care about your product. That is the most hardcore truth. I mean, if I turn into something on an interview like this and a guy's just like, you're trying to pull questions out of me, why would I back your stuff? Why would I do it? Yeah, it just there's no way.
That two things on that. The first one is 100% agree about like the palpableness and passion. Like the, you know, you can really tell when someone's excited. Even yeah. Greg knows this. Like when we tried to shoot our first like Kickstarter video forever ago, like I couldn't get like that energy out of him. But when he would talk to somebody about the project, he was always excited. I'm like, just do it like that. I'm like, you're more you're like, you know, get rid of the monotone, like pretend like you're talking to somebody. And one thing, another thing on that, that you said too, was like, you know, somebody asked about stuff and people like, oh, I can't say that till the first story comes out. Like we do have a ton of stuff in ours. And so we try to keep some of it secret, but like, nobody knows your project yet. Right. Like, if you're an independent artist, that means that there's at least 7 billion people who've never heard of you, right? Like, because there's so many people, haven't even gotten the 0.00001% of the population to ever hear about you, and you don't know what part of your story is going to hook somebody. So, like, it could be that one little secret you have. So, like, we have a bunch of Easter eggs in our stories that we don't want to ruin those.
I love Easter eggs.
But, like, we have tons of other stuff that, like there's on certain podcasts I mentioned, and Greg will mention, like, hey, we've never mentioned this before, but, and then we'll say something about it that, like, we don't normally tell. And that way, there's a book I'm reading right now called Superfans by Pat Flynn. And he talks about this idea of, like, having these little insiders that you drop on different platforms you're on, so that like your real fans that listen to everything you're ever on are the ones that get to go, did you hear about that thing? Cause I know about it. Cause I'm a real fan. It's like, you know, I love talking about the Dragon Ball Z. It's over 9,000 meme. Right. And the funny thing is if you're a real Dragon Ball Z fan, not somebody who only watched the anime, you know that the actual number is 8,000. And the reason why is because 8,000 was in the manga, but when they translated it to English, it didn't sound as cool, and they said 9,000. And because of that, they kept that, and that became the meme. It's like little stuff like that that if you're like that real fan. Well, I love that.
That's the thing. Like, I don't mind giving small spoilers away. You know what I mean? As the creator, I know that there's certain things I won't touch because they're important to the overall story. But other stuff, like, yeah, I've watched creators, like, they won't tell you anything. I'm like, then why are you doing a live on Instagram, or why are you doing this, talking about your stuff, if you're not talking about your stuff? Every question was like, you have to wait for the book. Well, why are you on here? Why are you even talking?
I was just thinking that's something that we actually learned running our Kickstarter was on our first crowdfunding campaigns that we did. Like, we were on Indiegogo at first and then Kickstarter. Yeah. We didn't really share a lot of art. Part of it was because we didn't have a lot of it done, but part of it was like, oh, we don't want to ruin the story, right? Yeah, and now, right. Like, we share almost the whole story in the Kickstarter because it's like people want to know what they're getting. It's a new story. They don't know what to expect. And so, like, that's why the video is so important. They say, like, what is it, 80% of all funded Kickstarters have a video? It's like,
there's a
reason for that.
Straight up fact. Yeah, for sure. And, like, I when I built this Kickstarter that I'm in the middle of right now, I took a couple pages from the epilogue from my previous book and put them in the Kickstarter so they could see where this character, this villain of mine, came from. And, you know, sure, I could be like, well, I want to keep that close to the chest. That's a really pivotal scene in that book. But I was like, no, man, because I can't tell you that this guy with a giant round happy face for a head. I can't tell you how dangerous this guy is just by promotional art. Yeah, it's covered in blood, and yeah, he's got knives and stuff. How about I show you? Let me show you exactly the kind of demented person that he is, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, you have to give a little to get it back. You have to. Yeah, you know, it's like fishing. I mean, that's really what it is, right? And you know, you want to get out there.
That's a really good metaphor.
You get what you put into it, right? If I don't put the rod and the reel and a bait in the water, am I catching anything? No, I'm not. They're gonna jump out of the stream and land at my feet. They're not doing it.
It's actually kind of funny too, because like there's that other marketing metaphor where you need a hook, like something that keeps them.
Yeah,
you know, connected.
Right. That's where it's came from.
I'm not even realizing that. Like that's like both of those. It's like you need a hook to get them, but you also just can't keep yanking on it because like they're not.
No.
You're not going to keep the fish on the line.
You got the color in the commercial. Almost had you. Yeah. Oh, just a little bit further.
But no, that's awesome. Nice. I was trying to think what the other thing was too. There was a second thing you said that was making me laugh, and I can't remember what it was now.
I say a lot of stupid shit, so.
I was going to talk about how you collaborate with other artists and stuff, but I, because you have the Savage Sandbox. So yeah. How did like that?
I get a lot of credit for that. It really started originally. It was, I was very good friends with Jesse Bear, who's part of Covenant, but he has Burlap Comic, his own IP. And, Jesse and I were wanting to make a Convictor and Burlap crossover. That's something we really were talking about doing. And, so we didn't want to, wanted something that was going to be, able to not be canon, you know, but you know, because you know, everybody has their Burlap has his own stories, the Convictor has his own story, so you don't want to interfere with these individual universes, if you will, right? So we were talking, and I said to him, the SSB was originally called Secret Squirrel Bullshit, that's what it was really called. Sorry, I said, we got to do some Secret Squirrel Bullshit to do this, and Jesse said, SSB, that's what we're going to call it. SSB Universe is what we were originally calling this little. And then it grew from there. It organically grew. You know, we brought in some other individuals, and it became, we decided we liked the words Savage because why not, right? And Sandbox, because we were using this as a platform originally that you could bring your toys to the sandbox, you could play, but you could take them. Anytime you can leave, and it doesn't impact anything outside of the sandbox. So that's what we were kind of going for. And it just kind of organically grew from there. It became a group of collaborators. Early on, we were just a group of guys who were, if I needed a cover, I would, you know, if, you know, one of the Savage members would jump on it. If we needed coloring or there was lettering. So it kind of was like that originally. And then we moved into, you know, we had members come and go, you know, things happen, right? And then, but we ended up moving into distribution. We had a couple channels in distribution, which was great because we had quite a few titles. And it was nice to get them into comic book shops, right? And just be available online from other platforms that's not our individual.com. So we were able to get that, and we got a lot of shops in California, a lot of shops up and down the East Coast, Florida, even the Philippines, which was pretty awesome. And, so we kind of, you know, we were doing distribution, still collaborating with each other, still all that. Right. And then their thing is the membership, the understanding with the membership is if someone's running a Kickstarter, we try to line them up so they don't crisscross, but stuff happens occasionally. Right. But if they did, all the other remaining members who aren't running a Kickstarter will help propel that. So they help. So there's more eyes on the product, more views on the product, more shares. And if we're doing a live, one of them jumps on the live, like on Instagram or something, if we can, because that brings in a whole other set of viewers to that, right? So that's where we started doing that. And now we became a legitimate LLC. So that's happened for us. It was inevitable, and we decided to do that. And everyone has roles and jobs now. I'm the editor in chief. So you know, everyone's got a job in the Savage Sandbox because now we're moving into publishing. I can't talk a whole lot about that right now, but we definitely publishing is on our horizon. We have a couple publishing deals to market our individual IPs as. Under a Savage Sandbox title, Savage Sandbox Comics. And then it'll be more like, I think we're heading into like anthology territory with our characters because we have so many different characters. We can set one book up as action, one book up as suspense, one book up as horror. So that's what we're doing. And so we're moving into that, and that's kind of how that happened. And we all have jobs and shit now, and it was just chill and fun, and now it's like a job. so you know, I mean, it's still fun though. But you know, now everybody's got, you know, you got responsibilities and shit. So
that's kind of awesome. Like that's interesting because part of what Greg and I have been working on for the past few months ourselves is like. So obviously we create our own comics as well. And mm-hmm. we have our platform where we broadcast other people's right. comics on there. And what kept happening was we kept getting a few people that were asking like, hey, can you publish our comics? And we're like,
yes,
like my first question was like, what does that mean? Like, like I know, like it's such a weird thing to think about because basically what happened was, I ended up going online. I'm like, what does a comic book publisher do? And I'm like looking into it, and I'm like, because like I know what book publishers do. I got friends in like the nonfiction realm of books, and like a book publisher, their main thing is also getting like your ISBN right number, so getting it officialized so that it's an indexed book. That's a pretty big deal, actually, because then it's trackable on tons of different platforms that are already existing. Absolutely. And then the other big thing was just distribution, right? So it's the creation of the product, the labeling of the product with the ISBN, and the distribution. And I'm like, comic books don't get ISBNs. So I'm like, basically, we just create it and distribute it? Is that really all we have to do?
I can tell you from our aspect, you can buy ISBNs.
Well, so they're limited, though. They have to be larger than, something like 48 pages, actually. It has a very specific number. And so that's the thing, is the average comic's 24. And so you don't get, you don't want somebody have, a series of comics and, the fifth one's 49 pages, so you'd make that one a ISBN. It wouldn't make any sense logically. So I'm like, the biggest thing that we could really do, other than, graphic novels, those are ones that you want to get an ISBN for, because it is the whole collection of a series, a six-part series or something like that. And so that was kind of the stuff we were looking at, and it's super interesting because
we did it backwards. We went distribution then publishing, so
honestly though, that's so coincidentally, because we haven't published anyone else's comics yet, and that's actually what we came to the conclusion of, was that our biggest hurdle will actually be distribution. So that's actually what we're working on now, is setting up our own distribution chains.
There's a lot of, I mean, you got Diamond? You can go through Diamond now. What else? There's tons of smaller ones that are out there. I think there's
A gold and there's a silver, I believe. There's literally
right. So, they're out there. Some of the criteria that they want for distribution is also a make or break sometimes when you're coming in as a small indie publisher.
So that's what we're trying to do, though. Ironically, we're trying to become distributors. We actually want to go beyond, behind Diamond. Right. So that's some of the stuff we're working on, is literally trying to connect with comic book stores ourselves.
There's definitely a need for that in the community, for sure. And I know out in California, I think Maverick Distribution. They're doing that now, as opposed to a larger Diamond. There's definitely avenues, and that's a smart play, I think. And it helps out a lot of smaller property, for sure. And, at the end of the day, we're all in here trying to get our stuff out there. But our community, it seems large, but it's not. Usually in the circles, somebody knows somebody. We've already discovered that a million times, I'm sure, by now. And, our community, I say this all the time, it's literally it's time for indie comics, for sure. I think we've all believed that. And because just the mainstream comics are just losing their damn minds right now about everything. And here's us guys. We're just out here crunching along, making stories we want to read. You know what I mean? That's all we're doing. And I think it's our time for sure.
That's funny. That actually made me think of something I want to ask on behind our Nova Nation, Nova Nation portion of this, which I don't know if Greg described, right? We got the second part, but I have a specific thing I'll ask you about when we come to that. But for now, I wanted to ask, what advice would you give to aspiring comic creators, right? Because we're talking about how the industry is, it's one of those things where it's both big and small, in the sense that there are a lot of people, but everybody knows somebody, right? So what kind of advice would you give to aspiring comic creators?
I get asked a lot, especially through Instagram, because, I try to be approachable. I get asked that quite a bit, actually, through, I get DM'd it at least once a week from somebody. And, it's funny. It's it's surreal that they're looking at me like I'm accomplished. I'm like, I'm not. I struggle just like everybody else. You know what I mean? But still, it's, you try to help out, because I wouldn't have been able to do the things I've done without asking advice of people that have done it previously. So that's why I always want to be approachable, because I know that advice was invaluable to me. So I can give you a couple pieces that really helped me. One was what I said prior was the passion. You got to be passionate about your project. If you're making a comic just to make a comic because you want to be the next Marvel, you probably should step back and reevaluate. All right. You should make a comic because it's something you believe in and you want to get it out there. Yes, it's a plus that other people make it. Other people read it and check it out. That's great. Make it for yourself. No, you have to do it for yourself because at the end of the day, if you're doing it for someone else, you're doing it for the wrong reason, right? So there's that. One other thing I say is too, that being said, don't get too big for your britches. You need to be humble. If you do, you're not the second coming of anything. So you need to understand that. There's a million people out there and those million people, just like you said, we're all, you know, the community is vast, but there's people out there that are talented, more talented than you. There's people out there that hey, have way more influence than you and have, to be honest, a better product. Don't try to be that. Worry about you. Worry about your product. Keep your head down. Do your stuff. Like I said, it's all back to believing in your product. And really, don't believe your own hype. Even if you do get a following, you get a lot. You know, I used to be a professional fighter, and then I was a professional wrestler after that.
Just we always suddenly.
it's because of what I'm going to say. Because in both industries, there's a saying that says you don't believe your own hype. You don't believe your own shit talk. Because what's going to do is somebody's going to knock your head off. I always use Ronda Rousey as a perfect example of that. Because she, don't get me wrong, she's undeniably a badass. But when you don't take your opponent serious, that's when you get knocked the fuck out. I mean, that's what happens, right?
Yeah, like okay, when you get the rear naked choked out in like 6 seconds.
So same thing in professional wrestling. You don't believe your gimmick. Don't live your gimmick. Don't believe your gimmick. You're just a guy like 10 other guys that are on the card. So you don't believe your hype. And it's the same thing in comics. You don't believe your own. You might have a great, you had a first Kickstarter. It was great and successful. Don't kill yourself patting yourself on the back. You need to get out there and you need to hustle every day to keep that momentum. And so that's, like I said, you just don't believe in your own greatness. What you need to believe in is yourself to create a product and you make that product great. That's a big difference. And so that's my piece of advice. Like I try to hold true to those. I try to, you know, and they get people interested in your product. Again, I will say it again. This is my biggest tenet. You got to believe in your own product and you have to be passionate about it. Like that's huge. That's everything. So that's my best piece of advice.
One thing that made me think of was, what's it called? Like Muhammad Ali or even Conor McGregor, the idea that, like believe in your own hype. Like notice that those are the only two names I can pull off the top of my head. Like there's not a lot of people that talk a lot of smack and then believe it. The one thing I'd have to say, it's like I meet a lot of ambitious people. I don't meet a lot of people with drive. Right. Like
there's two different things. Yeah.
And if you talk a lot of smack but have no drive, right, it doesn't matter. And you'll let yourself down, which will slow you down even faster. Like if you think you're the greatest ever, and then you get knocked out, you're going to collapse and there'll be nothing to lean against. Yes.
And that's the thing. Like, you're right. That's a great point because, right, you can believe all these things about yourself and you can do that. And it's how you can get knocked down because we're all going to get knocked down. That's what happens. How do you get back up? That's the difference, right?
Yeah.
That's where drive comes into play. If you have drive, you'll get up. If you are just, you know, wanting admiration and wanting to be, you know, talked all this stuff and then you end up getting, you know, knocked down a peg. And then what happens? You know, what do? Do you get up or you just lay on the floor? You get up. And you're right. That's the difference between drive and ambition. Completely, 100%. That's the difference.
And that, what is it? The fall down 7 times, get up 8, like the Japanese proverb. It's like you only do that if you really are, like you mentioned, passionate about your project. Yep. Like you're not going to get up again if there's so many people, like especially like in the music industry, I meet that are like super driven, and then like one failure, they're like, "This isn't even worth my time." And it's like, it's like that kid who sucks at baseball, because I know I did that, right? Where like, you know, you're terrible at it. I'm like, I hate baseball. It's terrible. It's like, no, you're just bad at it. Like, if you want to do it, you can get good at it, right? But you really got to go after it.
I mean, it's like anything else, practice. Yeah, I mean, don't worry. There's those legends in the industry that can, first time they pick up a pencil, they're drawing masterpieces. They exist. They do exist. Just like, just in athletics, there's one person that takes to something like a fish to water. That's great. But the rest of us, we got to hustle and we got to work at it.
The two best, Muggsy, or what is it, LeBron James and Muggsy Bogues, right? Like, you got somebody who is just like an incredible athlete, you know, probably popped out shooting a, you know, three-pointer kind of thing. And, you know, somebody who's 5'3" is, you know, going running around people like insanity. Like, you know,
the rest of us have to hustle. The rest of us get down in the dirt and do in the trenches and do the work. That's just how it is. You know, that's it. Like I said, that's the best advice I can give. You just really gotta understand why you're in it and be true to the reasons why you're in it, and understand that not everyone's gonna be into what you're doing. And but you need to be into what you're doing. That's the difference.
Absolutely.
Well, where can people find you?
All right. Well, my largest fan base is Instagram. You can find me at The Convictor on Instagram, or Convictor Comics. I'll pop up. That's primarily where I do a lot of my business. You can find me on, I have a YouTube channel as well, Pharos Creative Studios. You can find that as well. All this stuff is on, you know, my Instagram profile. You know, I have a link tree like most of us. And so you can get that in there. I have a .com. I have convictorcomics.com and pharoscreativestudios.com. Let's see. I'm on Facebook, too. I don't really frequent Facebook that much. I mean, I'm on there. But you can get Convictor Comics on Facebook as well. I think I have a Twitter that I set up. I don't know. I'm using the one. I got to get over there, because that's a piece of the puzzle that I'm not really using, and I'm being stupid about it.
Twitter's quite big with comics, I noticed.
Yeah. I know that. Yeah. And I think I have like 19 followers over there. So that's cool. So
those are the real fans.
That's the real fans. That's right. But yeah, I'm on Twitter too. Convictor Comics, Pharos Creative Studios, or just Jason Pharos. You can find me there as well. So yeah, it's the best places to get me.
Cool.
But usually Instagram, that's the number one.
So. Excellent. Well, for those that are coming over to Nova Nation, don't forget, you can stop by our website, button top right of the page, join Nova Nation, and you'll be able to see what we're going to talk about next.